Greetings to our audience all over the world. This is the Knowledge in Action podcast, and we are happy to be here today with you to have a conversation about governance and politics. We are going to be exploring how learning happens in the area of governance and politics, and we'll be focusing our attention on the component that we've been spending a lot of time on this week in the East Africa Community Youth Fellowship. This podcast is brought to you as a partnership from the MS Training Center in Arusha and the Danida Fellowship Center in Denmark, both learning institutions that commit themselves to learning, promoting learning methodologies, and ensuring that knowledge is then transformed into action. We have gathered here young people from all over the East Africa community to learn, to retool and retool themselves on matters of leadership and governance so that they can provide leadership for the governance processes in Africa. Week three of the fellowship was to cover governance and politics, youth leadership for the Africa we want. And today I have special guests in the studio to help me execute this topic. I have people who will give you the perspective of the learner and the perspective of the instructor. Allow me to introduce my guest before I proceed so that you can get to know who's going to be speaking to you in the room. Stay put. I'm going to start with you. On my immediate left, I have Mercy from Uganda, who's going to introduce herself, tell you why she's in this conversation and how she ended up in the fellowship.
Good evening to the listeners. My name is Mercy Awino, and I am from Uganda. I am a lawyer and an enthusiast of politics and governance and democratic governance. So I have been part of the East African Youth Fellowship, and it's been an amazing 2 weeks just delving into how leadership is supposed to be, how we can harness our potential as youth to deliver the Africa that we want through our leadership styles. So it's been really lovely listening to different instructors, especially on governance, leadership, and politics.
Thank you very much, Mercy. We put together a powerful faculty to deliver the leadership and the governance and politics module. And I have our lead instructor in the room who's going to introduce himself and tell you what he thinks about this topic in general.
Hello, my name is Julius Kiza. I'm a professor of political economy of development. I teach in the Department of Political Science and Public Administration. I do training in leadership and development, and I'm passionate about institution building, and I'm passionate about the youth participation in governance spaces, the youth as co-authors of their destiny, not just as victims of misgovernance. So I'm very happy to be here.
That is the kind of panel that I've put together for you today to have this conversation. Mwalimu, let me start with you. What goes into the teaching of governance and politics? If you are especially speaking to a group of young people who may not necessarily have taken interest in governance and politics, what goes into teaching them about governance and politics?
I think the starting point is to be able to define what is it that we miss out when governance doesn't work, what is it that we suffer when there is misgovernance, when the rule of law is breached, when constitutions are not respected, when duty bearers breach the spaces they should be occupying to deliver public services, and when citizens become absentee citizens, therefore permitting people who hold power to do as they wish rather than doing what is required to change the condition of the citizens. So these are critical spaces. What happens if the inclusivity of the gender agenda in the development process is breached? What happens when people with disabilities are excluded from the conversation? What happens when the idea of accountable governance is breached? So these, in my view, are very important issues. But within the infrastructural space, we also have the need for infrastructure which works for the 21st century. The idea that we don't need motorcycles in a smart city. The idea that a smart city needs to have digital capabilities. The idea that we need a smart city which is also green. The idea that we want a livable city, a city that will have spaces for the urban population and the increasingly urbanizing societies, but also a city that creates jobs for the citizens, especially the youth. 68% of our youth in Africa are now out of formal sector employment. And these are some of the issues that we need to address.
Interesting points that you raise there, and very interesting ideas that you raise on what needs to be transferred in terms of knowledge or imparted in terms of knowledge in a governance and politics class. How did these strategies that you have described and the knowledge that you have described, how did you transfer that knowledge to the 29 young people you've interacted with this week? Or what kind of magic was happening in that room?
The magic is very simple. The magic is to define myself as a PO Box generation instructor. And the magic is to be able to say that young men, young women, you must occupy your space.
Mm-hmm.
You must be co-authors of the conversation, that you must not accept a narrative that is imposed upon you, that nothing for us without us. The idea that you must be part of the conversation, part of the solution, the challenges before us. So my job as a PO Box generation instructor was actually to open the conversation and then allow the youth to be co-authors of the narrative so that they're part of the solution,
mm-hmm.
just waiting for answers.
Very empowering, Mwalimu, and especially when you transfer the responsibility to now begin designing solutions to the students themselves. I need to inform my audience that Mercy is also a former ambassador from the platform of the East Africa Community Youth Ambassadors Platform, Her Excellency by her own right. They always say once an ambassador, always an ambassador. Let me bring her in to tell us what her experience was as a learner and how did she receive the magic that Mwalimu has just described.
Thank you, Stella. So I think one of the most magical things about learning democratic governance this week has been the fact that we were actually teaching the modules together with the instructor, that he would introduce the topic, give us points of thought, and then open up the room to the students, the fellows, to stand up, share their ideas, their insights on most of the concepts that we're discussing, and also to share stories from our individual countries. What is the political terrain like, for example, in Uganda? How is it in Rwanda? And what best practices can we get from each of these countries? If, for example, we're talking about electoral democracies, and then we had an analysis of how Uganda's electoral process is, and then also another analysis of how it is in Kenya. So then we look at what other weaknesses in both systems and which system has done better than the other. And then what lessons can we, for example, as Uganda, get from Kenya? What can Kenya get from Uganda? So it's been very enriching, but also looking, most of my colleagues in the class are really brilliant. And some of the ideas that they give as solutions to the problems that are emerging in our societies right now, they're very refreshing, you know, and Mwalimu also uses some Kiswahili. So, we have been saying that, oh, the Ugandans are suffering. No, we don't know Kiswahili. So obviously now, and in the broader discussion on integration, we know now that we need to learn Kiswahili, but it's been very invigorating. But also the fact that he uses images, right? He uses images and videos. And some of these things, so for example, I come from one of the least developed regions in Uganda. I know that some of the schools that are there may not have the best infrastructure. But seeing it on the screen with other people watching it with me, it shocks me again. And you know, it makes me think that, you know, Mercy, you can't just sit and allow this to happen over time. And so it kind of rekindles a fire within me to go back home and mobilize people so that we can cause some change. And when we're talking, say, about how much we lose in public debt, in our taxation regime, you know, and when the figures are put out there and you actually see and you think about it and what change we could have if this money was not going out in the ways that they're going out now. So it just rallies us up to actually want change and not change to be done when we get into the positions of power as we think power is, but to start the change now.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it's been very engaging and very inspiring.
Let me push a little bit further, Mercy. Do you think learning and teaching needs to transform a little, considering the experience you've had in the classroom, You're saying the learner has knowledge that they bring into the classroom, and the instructor also comes with knowledge, but there's a possibility for that knowledge to mesh inside one classroom without necessarily one person coming in thinking they know everything.
So Chimamanda Adichie has said that, you know, we need to be wary of the danger of a one-sided story. And usually when you look at our education system, it's the kind where you have one instructor teaching over 50 students. What that means then is if the instructor has gotten it wrong, then he's infecting all the 50 students with the wrong information that he has. And teachers teach many students at a given time. So they actually have the potential of misinforming a whole generation. The kind of teaching that professor brings, so he introduced himself as a P.O. Box instructor, dealing with .com students. So obviously there are certain things that we know that he does not know. And there are things that he knows that we do not know. So it is very pertinent and it's imperative that we actually have that blend of knowledge. And we cannot just get stuck in that older generation way of instruction, that kind of pedagogy, because then it's no longer delivering. It's no longer in line with how the world is right now. So whereas he can come with his articles, his publications, he also needs to get into the digital side of it and then have that information blended. And yes, I believe that we can then enrich our education.
There you have it. There you have it. We are saying that learning needs to change. The kind of process that we engage in for learning to happen need to change, because today, both the learner and the instructor come into the classroom with a lot of information. It is only the sources that may differ. And we have managed to achieve that in the East Africa Community Youth Fellowship. I should mention to my audience that the East Africa Community Youth Fellowship is an initiative of the East Africa Community Secretariat, the MS Training Center for Development Cooperation, and with the technical support of the Jakaya Mrisho Kikwete Foundation, the Julius Nyerere Leadership Center, and the Emerging Leaders Foundation. These minds have come together to design a learning program that is going to tool and retool and re-kit our young people with leadership skills, leadership knowledge that they can be able to use in the marketplace. The intention in the classroom is to get this knowledge out of the classroom and convert it into action in the community. Mwalimu, you seem to be winning with the methods that you've used in the classroom, especially from what we hear Mercy describing. And I could pick out from her conversation, especially mentioning pedagogy, I could pick out from her conversation that you've used a lot of problem-based learning, where you present a problem to them for them to analyze, and they are able to pick out solutions as a result of analyzing the problem, and a bit of experiential learning where they learn from their stories and the stories that you bring into the room. What is the value of bringing in those kinds of learning methodologies into a process of learning about governance and politics?
One of the biggest contributions is that when we get involved in simulation exercises, so the learner is part of the co-creation of knowledge. So co-creation of knowledge means that the learner will not leave the learning space assuming that they were just recipients of wisdom. They will leave the learning space knowing that they are co-authors of the knowledge. And sometimes that involves the learner repackaging what they already knew. And sometimes all we do is to create the spirit of teamwork and the learning spaces so that the learner now repackages the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even it involves redefining the problem. Because look at the question of motorcycles, which have become a pandemic in many of our cities. The problem of women's marginalization, the problem of youth unemployment, the informalization of our productive sectors, the problem of infrastructure which does not work for the 21st century. All of these challenges, when we get the youth involved in simulation exercises, in teamwork, they actually leave the learning space saying, yes, we did it. Mm-hmm. We produced the knowledge. Mm-hmm. Rather than assuming that an authoritarian instructor is the one who dictated this wisdom on us. When people own the knowledge, mm-hmm. when they co-author the knowledge, it means implementation will be easier. Mm-hmm. They will be able to think through the methods and ways of translating this knowledge into deliverable policy outcomes.
Thank you very much, Mwalimu. You know, I realized that in one of the conversations I walked into, you had actually gotten them to think extensively about what is not not working in the regional integration process. You have had them thinking extensively about what is not working in our governance system, or even what is perpetuating corruption. And one of the things that came to my mind is that we expect them to develop an action plan at the end of the training, but it seems that the process of designing solutions has already started. So even in terms of action, the learning process is also enabling them to begin designing solutions. Is that something you'd highly recommend, that is applied in every other learning process, so that then the learners come out of the class and convert the knowledge into action?
Absolutely. Because one of the things we need to impart among the youth is the appreciation that you don't have to wait to be a cabinet minister or the prime minister or the head of state for you to be able to design solutions. You can exercise what we call citizen agency in the space you occupy, within your political party, within the community, within the environment where you're operating. You can already begin to design solutions to problems. So I have emphasized the idea that even if your party has not won political office through the electoral process, even if you are not in government, you can actually author solutions. So the idea is that good government must be exercised wherever we are, so that when we get to public office and public spaces, we are able to actually build on what we have been practicing.
Very well, Mwalimu. Let me bring in Masi. Masi, is it true that there are certain solutions that you've already thought about by now? Are there, you know, snippets? Are there nuggets that you've picked out of the training that you're saying, this I can already go back and act on?
Yeah, there are solutions that we have come up with. And I think for me, one of the most profound solutions was the fact that, as he said, that you do not need to wait to become a cabinet minister in order to exercise your power and do something for your community. So, for example, as I said, drawing on the example of the video that you showed us of a school that was very dilapidated, what can I do as a person? I don't have to wait to be the Minister of Education and Sports in order to then set up a school and build one. No, I can use my, for example, on Twitter, I have about 1,000 followers and people that I engage with on a day-to-day basis, people that also want change but probably do not know how to effect the change that they want. I could mobilize them, get them to contribute some money, even the community in which we want this school to be, get them together and, you know, start laying bricks and build up a school. And then when we have something to show for it, we can then go to the people in that are in government, people that have the money, and ask them to probably tile up the school or buy equipment for the school. So that not only helps us put up a structure, but it also gives that collective spirit that people then have, that, you know, we did something for our community. And the younger people that watch us do that then grow up with a sense of responsibility that they do not have to wait for the government to do something for them if the government is not doing it. You know, they can do it themselves. And when they do it themselves, then we can be met halfway, and then we can actually have the change that we want.
I'm sure my audience must be asking, if they take up the responsibility of building the school or repairing the road, where then does that leave the responsibility of government towards citizens to do the same? Is there any other actions that they could take aside from that to convince the government that they need to begin taking action about these causes? And were there any conversations you had about that in the class?
Yes. So obviously, the social contract theory that, you see, we elect this government, the government in place, such that they can provide services, and then there has to be effective service delivery to the citizens. But where our governments fail and where things are not working the way we want, because some of our systems are not exactly where we would want them to be. So we don't have to wait for a savior. You know, some people have a savior complex, but then they don't even walk the talk. So as citizens, it's just about having agency as a citizen and knowing that sometimes you have the solution by yourself. But then if our governments have any respect for the mandate that we have given them, then they should look at the things that the citizens are doing and, I don't know, have some shame so that they can, you know, wake up and actually do the kind of work that they should be doing. But then outside of that, right now we have social media. And I think it's high time that we now embrace the emancipatory capacity of social media. In Uganda, for example, we had a social media campaign where the roads were really bad. And then Dr. Spire came up on Twitter and asked Ugandans on Twitter to take photos of roads with potholes and put the hashtag the pothole exhibition. And after just 2 weeks, the government came and responded and said, you know what, we are going to actually work on these roads. And there has been some change. So if that could happen, imagine how much more could happen if we just rallied ourselves, worked together, and held the government accountable.
Agency. There are complex questions that we keep on asking, and there are complex questions that we must respond to, vexing questions about constitutionalism, vexing questions about how to make the governance systems of our countries to work, how to make the theory of social contract a reality for the citizens of our continent. Many governance questions that require answers, and so few people who are able to answer those questions. We invite you to engage in this conversation, comment on the topic, and ensure that you then also be a part of the solution, like Mwalimu JK has requested us to do. And I also hear that the message is that you should be able to hold your government accountable. Even as you organize yourselves to begin to respond to the immediate needs of your society, hold your governments accountable and ensure that then they're coming out to account to you, because you give them power and you give them resources to serve on your behalf. We have been talking about learning on governance and politics, and I want to get a parting shot from my guest, because we have focused on capacity building for governance and politics, but there are many other areas that may need solutions. Today, our focus is on the learning. What are your parting shots concerning this matter of governance? I'll start with you, Mwalimu.
My parting shot is that as conveyors of wisdom, it is erroneous for instructors, for teachers, for Walimu. Walimu is the Swahili word for teacher. It's erroneous for us to assume that we know everything, because we are dealing with a digital generation, and we are dealing with learners who have alternative sources of wisdom. So it is humbling, but also very, very significant for the learning process for us to know that learners and instructors are co-authors of new knowledge. But second, it is extremely important for us to emphasize that in the spaces of governance, that if citizens are missing in action, duty bearers go on leave. So we are the change we've been waiting for. And I like the Swahili word, twaweza ni sisi. So we need to be able to know that we are the change we've been waiting for. We have to occupy our space and be able to ensure that learning takes place and that what we learn is translated into deliverables. But the third issue is what we haven't been emphasizing so much this conversation so far, namely that uhuru bila nguvu ya kiuchumi ni hewa kabisa. So the idea that we are going to have freedoms without the economic empowerment is a waste of space. We need to ensure that the liberation and the politics and the governance are blended with the need to create improvements in the economic conditions of the people we serve. And we have also emphasized the idea of the gender agenda. Women inclusivity is an extremely important issue. But we have challenged ourselves to appreciate that many of the females talking about the gender agenda focus on elite women who are already empowered, who can compete with anybody, mm-hmm. anywhere in the world. So we need to be able to say, how do we expand the conversation mm-hmm. of the gender agenda to bring on board the ordinary woman in the rural spaces, the woman who has been excluded by economic policies, the woman who needs somebody to reach them out and lift them up. So the global conversation is on leaving no one behind. But we seem in the gender agenda to emphasize the needs of women who are already empowered. But we have also said that gender is not about women alone, that we need the boy child. Many of the boys we meet today appear subdued. You cannot have empowered girls when the boy child is disempowered. Mm-hmm. So to create a new conversation, a new narrative, and a new governance dispensation, we need to ensure that the boy child is empowered. And very finally, as my parting shot, we need to work in the governance space on infrastructure that will deliver the 21st century community that we want. And in the case of East Africa, some countries are already leading us in building smart cities, in building the standard gauge railway line, in building artificial intelligence capabilities, in building robotics engineering capabilities, in building spaces for virtual service delivery. These are spaces we need to emphasize for the young generation, but also for the general citizenry, I submit.
Very profound proposals on how we are able to move forward on our governance conversations. Over to you, Your Excellency.
I think one of the most profound things that I have learned this week is the fact that as citizens, when we do not hold our governments accountable, then we become co-authors, stroke accomplices in the bad governance that we are seeing. So we need to take up our agency and exercise our duties, exercise our rights to actually get governments, demand for our rights, demand for accountability from the government. So everyone has to be a participant in the process of democracy, in the process of governance, because it's not just about the leaders, it's about every person. And it would be foolhardy for anyone to say that, oh, I am not interested in politics, I am not interested in leadership, because then what they're trying to say is that we don't think that politics or governance actually affects everything. Yet in actual sense, it does, even to the very food that we eat. So everyone has to realize that they have a duty to play in governance, and everyone should take up the mantle. So that's the most profound thing, and I hope that everyone that's listening can just do something to effect change in their area of influence.
There you have it from Her Excellency, the former Youth East Africa Community Youth Ambassador, Mercy Awino, and Mwalimu Julius Kiza, a.k.a. Mwalimu JK. I promised you that my audience was going to be fire. I promised you that my audience was going to come to you with a lot of wisdom, but they've also told you that there's knowledge that you have to share. So please remember to comment on this and follow up the conversation with dialogue in your different spaces. This is the Knowledge in Action podcast, brought to you as a partnership between the Danida Fellowship Center and the MS Training Center for Development Cooperation. We are both learning institutions that are very keen on promoting learning and capacity building for different topics, especially and particularly on the topics of democracy and governance, stability, green transition. And we commit ourselves to ensure that we will consistently bring to you knowledge and share the experiences that we have, even as we deliver capacity building for different topics, including the topic of the week, which is governance and politics, youth leadership for the Africa we want. With that, this is your host, Stella, saying goodbye until next time.